Hi, I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning of Edible Philly.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about dips for dinner, vegan meatballs, and cooking in the seasonal transition. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week. So, Joy.
We're both, like, really interested in grocery stores.
I find the topic endlessly fascinating.
I would call us grocery store nerds. So when I saw this article on PhillyMag.com about a local food blogger went out and compared her grocery bill for the same, I think it was 14 items at three or four area stores.
Yeah.
I was very interested.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. So the blogger, Madeline Togg, she did her weekly shopping. One week she did it at Whole Foods. One week she did it at Aldi, Trader Joe's, and Acme. And Acme is sort of the Philly region's kind of generic grocery store.
Yeah.
And she bought the same sort of things. She tried, if she bought it organic one place, she tried to buy it organically in another place. And she really, and part of it was that she's a shopper of Whole Foods often. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh my gosh, how can you afford to shop there? And she wanted to prove that it wasn't as expensive as somebody might think. And her results were interesting. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, anyone who listens to this podcast regularly knows my feelings about Whole Foods, but just to briefly recap, I was a loyal Whole Foods shopper for at least a decade, and then they started making a lot of changes, and now I try to avoid going there at all costs. So I'm well familiar with Whole Foods. And then Acme is super, like, spitting distance from my house.
Yeah.
I don't like shopping there, but I do because it's so close and convenient.
Yeah.
So I had my own ideas about those two things. And I have passing familiarity with Trader Joe's. Aldi I had never been to.
Mm-hmm.
So my expectation would be that Whole Foods would be the most expensive, with Acme in a close second, because Acme is outrageously expensive sometimes. I can't believe what things cost there. And with Trader Joe's and Aldi being the cheapest.
Yeah.
But that's not what she found.
No, she found – so the very cheapest was Aldi. And one of the things that Aldi's done in recent days is they've really stepped up the organics game. So she was able to get lots of affordable organics, and her total for whatever, you know, this assortment of groceries was $46.28, which is, you know, for a week's worth of, you know, groceries, including meat, that's not bad.
Since you're looking at it, can you say briefly what some of the things are?
Yeah. So she bought broccolis, banana, grape or cherry tomatoes, organic spinach, a spring mix, eggs, turkey slices, sweet potatoes, onions, avocados, grass-fed ground beef, sourdough, a non-dairy milk, bacon, goat cheese, and chicken breasts.
Okay.
And onions. And
sounds pretty typical.
Yeah. So Aldi, the cheapest. Second cheapest was Trader Joe's at $53.97. So still like $6 more than mm-hmm. Aldi. And then next came Whole Foods at $59.89, so almost $60. So that is $14 more than Aldi, which is pretty significant. And then the very most expensive was Acme, our sort of, you know, gross general grocery store, at $72.94. So Acme was more than $20 more expensive than Aldi.
I'm surprised, but not that surprised,
yeah,
because of my experiences shopping at Acme.
Well, and I mean, the thing with Acme is that they put such a premium on organics. So I'm
just, oh my God.
You know, so the fact that she was trying to buy organic meat and dairy and vet produce meant that she was going to pay a significant premium at Acme. Whereas, sort of like Aldi seems to think that affordable organics are a right, not a privilege. Whereas Acme thinks of them more as a privilege than a right.
Although I must say, and again, I'm going to reserve, based on this, because of this article, I actually went and shopped at Acme,
uh-huh,
or at Aldi one day. I bought a small bag of organic Persian cucumbers,
mm-hmm,
and they went moldy like within minutes of me having them at
home. Oh no.
Not minutes, but hours.
Yeah. Well, I do think that is sometimes a risk you run with sort of, you know, when there's not a lot of selection.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to talk about this more next
week. Yeah,
we're
going to do an Aldi segment so we can compare notes.
But I've shopped a lot at Aldi, and I've really found that there are times when things like that happen, or like a bag of spring mix or something will, you know, turn slimy within 12 hours of buying it. But I've also really found that I can get a lot of terrific, like, fruit that's organic and is really affordable. So like in the summer times, or the best thing for me about Aldi is in the winter months, if I'm doing recipe testing, that I need things that are out of season, they are one of the best places to get it and have it be affordable. Mm-hmm. So like if I need to make a strawberry jam in January for some sort of recipe testing, or recipe development gig that I'm doing, like they.
It's food writer life.
It's food writer life.
I did a pumpkin pie last weekend. It was so weird.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes as a food writer, you need things in the off season and they can be prohibitively expensive. And so for me, Aldi has come to my rescue in that situation more than once where it won't be crazy expensive and I can get what I need.
Okay. Well, stay tuned for our full download on Aldi next time. So let's talk about dinner.
Yeah.
I've really been turning to dips for dinner.
I like it.
It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Can be healthy.
Yeah.
It can be a treat, depending on what direction you go in. One thing that I really love is veg restaurants here in Philadelphia. Their fondue. They have this rutabaga fondue, which is a vegan fondue.
I don't think I've ever had that.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Oh, my God. That's outrageous. So delicious. And then I've talked about Kristen Donnelly's little cauliflower book before.
Yeah.
And she does a cauliflower fondue in her book.
That sounds so good.
She does use cheese, but the base is cauliflower. So I've been experimenting a little bit with like a cheese-free or cheese-light fondue in my house and have been loving that as part of a dip spread. Of course, there's hummus.
Of course.
We have talked about vegetable spreads on this podcast before. And
I love a vegetable spread.
I love to do a vegetable spread. I like to do a spread with like softened cashews, like with vegetables, or even a silken tofu spread with other types of flavors in it. And then in terms of what I like to put it on, there's cucumber slices, there's red pepper sticks, there's wasa crackers, which I love. There's I like to brush tortillas, either corn or flour, with a little oil and cook them in the oven until they're crisp.
Sort of tostada style?
Yes, or do the same thing with pitas.
Yeah.
So, guacamole. I forgot to mention guacamole. Perhaps the queen of dips.
Yeah.
Do you ever do a dips for dinner?
You know, I haven't, but you make me want to. I've certainly done dips for lunch where, you know, I'll make a batch of like a vegetable spread or, you know, the tofu ricotta and
bean dip.
Yep. And I'll have like
countless dips.
Some sort of dip on toast with a pile of vegetables on top and call it lunch. This reminds me a lot of my Aunt Doris. I don't think I've talked about her a lot on the podcast. I've written a lot about her in my books. She was an appetizer hobbyist. Her personal hobby in life was making hors d'oeuvres and appetizers. And much like, I don't know if anybody remembers the movie Mermaids, the Cher character in that movie, she only made appetizers to feed her kids. Like, so she set in the 60s. Anyway, if you remember Mermaids, you know, feel me on this. So my Aunt Doris, her hobby was she'd get like big rounds of rye bread and then make all these dips and put them in piping bags and like swirl them around, or like she'd line up her kids and my mom and, you know, make them. So she was my mom's aunt. She's my great aunt. She would put all the kids to work, like doing assembly line, like appetizers that she would then put in her deep freeze so that she was always ready for a party or an event. But then these things ended up also just being what they ate for like lunch or dinner. And so I love the concept because it also just gives me this warm, fuzzy feeling thinking about her. But yeah, I mean, I feel like there's no reason in the world that we should be reserving dips for parties or picnics. Like, they are such a useful tool because they allow you to make, you know, turn any sort of refrigerator bits into a meal.
Dips are also good in like a butter lettuce cup.
Oh, yeah.
Sprinkled with pumpkin seeds. And I think in the summer, it's great because you can make your dips ahead, like in the cool time of day, and then just pull them out of the fridge and it's like minimal cooking.
Yeah. And we're going to talk more about that later. But yeah, like we're hitting the time of year where it's not so fun to turn the stove on.
Yeah. I really encourage you to invite yourself to dips for dinner and enjoy.
It makes me think we should do an ebook about dips.
Perhaps. Yeah. Put it on our list.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I wanted to tell you how I make something else.
Tell me.
Vegan meatballs.
I'm right there with you for vegan meatballs.
On Mother's Day, we had my mom, Dan's mom over, and my mom loves Italian, but she doesn't eat meat. And we had, what did we make? We had some kind of meat, like that we got at actually Primal Supply, sausage. We were doing some kind of pasta with sausage. And I just felt sad that my mom didn't get a side dish for her pasta.
Mm.
So at the last minute, I was inspired by a purple carrot recipe that I had seen. It's walnuts, mushrooms, and miso are basically the main ingredients of this.
That sounds really good.
Yeah. You combine, it's 6 ounces of mushrooms, 2 ounces of walnuts, a tablespoon of miso. And those are basically your main ingredients, and you pulse it together in the food processor, and then you like form them into balls. And it's oats. There's like a half a cup of oats in it as well. And at first I was like, how is this mixture going to adhere and like create a meatball?
Yeah.
But as the salty miso draws water out of the mushrooms, it sort of soaks into the oats. And now soon you have like a, not a dough, but like a mixture that will hold together. And then you brush them with olive oil, and they are just extremely delicious.
Yeah.
Have you made vegan meatballs of any kind?
I haven't recently, but I was just kind of looking at my computer. There's a recipe from Alexandra Cooks. Mm-hmm. She's someone I follow both on her blog and on Instagram. And she made these fried greens meatless balls the other day on her Instagram feed.
And fried greens.
They looked so
meatless balls.
Yeah. So okay. It's basically like really well chopped and cooked greens. Mm-hmm. So like a bunch of greens, you saute them with some onions. And then I don't remember what else she puts in there as a binder. But
that's really the rub when it comes to vegan meatballs.
Yeah, they looked so good, and I was like, I need to make those. So they've been on my sort of mental to-do list. So when I saw you put them on the list here, I was really excited to see them. I also recently bookmarked a recipe for a vegetable burger that I think could also translate to be a meatball really well, a meatless meatball. It was a recipe from Edible Seattle that mm-hmm. ran last summer, and it's black beans and beets and then a little bit of cheese, and the cheese
is a good binder,
and it's not so much that they feel like overly indulgent.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, the recipe makes 12 servings, and Scott ran the points in his little Weight Watchers calculator, and it's 3 points per patty, which doesn't seem that bad. So you could have even 2 or 3 of those, you know, if you were him, and have a really satisfying dinner. I've been thinking a lot about doing that, you know, because as we progressed in our sort of food lives over the years, I really have been drifting more and more towards less and less meat. And it gets, you know, you need to do things. You need to keep active in order to keep it interesting.
You have to experiment. I mean, I'm still eating meatballs. I recently made like a sweet and sour chicken meatball, which was quite tasty.
That sounds good.
But I do prefer to have a majority of my meals be plant-based.
The other one that I've been thinking about making recently that I haven't is years ago. It has to be like 4 years ago. I went to IACP in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if you were there or not.
I don't think I was.
And there was a mushroom brunch. So like the mushroom, you know, board put on mm-hmm. this brunch. And one of the things they served was at the brunch, it was breakfast sausage, but it was half ground turkey and half ground mushrooms.
Oh yeah. That's a great trick.
And I have really like, that's been in the back of my head to do something like that this summer, just as like a turkey burger, mm-hmm. but like, you know, 1 pound of mushrooms, 1 pound of turkey. Then you get a lot from that meal. It's like, there'll be leftovers. We can eat it for 2 nights, but also really cutting the amount of meat that you're having in a burger.
That's always a good idea. To me, the question there is always like to cook the mushrooms first or to not cook them first, because obviously a pound of mushroom shrinks down to nothing.
It's true. I've done it once before, when I did sort of a like, sloppy Joe style thing, mm-hmm. but it was half mushrooms, half turkey. And I didn't cook them in that scenario. But what I did is I did a wet chop. So Vitamix, I put all the mushrooms in the Vitamix with some water, and then, so they were wet. There was a lot of moisture there. But then as that moisture evaporated, it made the sloppy joes really moist. And so in that case, I didn't
cook them. That sounds like it would work.
But I think that if I was trying to make patties and I didn't want them to fall apart, that I might cook them first, cook the water out, maybe add some like Swiss chard or spinach and onions, and then work that all in.
Yeah, sounds good. I like a vegan meatless. A meatless or vegan ball or burger.
Yeah.
If you guys have favorite recipes for those things, why don't you let us know in the comments section of the show notes? We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. So I'm the one who put this on the schedule this week, because I want to talk about sort of this cooking and the seasonal transition, because it's June. We're a couple weeks away from the official start of summer.
Mm-hmm.
I guess really when this airs, it'll just be 1 week. And I start to, like, I get really inspired this time of year, but I also, struggle a little bit to figure out, like, what to make for dinner because my standbys, the things I've relied on for the last 6 months, aren't as appropriate anymore. So like, I can't make a big pot of soup and eat it all week because who wants to eat a, you know, a bowl of warm soup?
I sometimes do.
Do
eat
you?
Soup in the summer, but just because it's so easy and so healthy and like, it is a great way to use up if you have stuff that's like at the end of its natural farmer's market life, you know?
It's true. But when I try to do that in the summer, Scott comes home and he's like, just what I want, a bowl of hot soup when it's 95 degrees out. Like, he gives me a little pushback. Not a lot. He'll eat it, but, you know.
When I get pushback like that from Dan, I'm like, there's the kitchen. Make yourself whatever you want. I'm having soup.
Yeah. But I just thought it might be good to kind of talk through our summer cooking strategies again and things to remind ourselves all of the great things we can make, like having dips for dinner or doing a meatless ball that you can make earlier in the day and then reheat or even eat cold. So
one of the most striking things about this time of year to me is the farmers markets are open. And like yesterday I rushed to my farmers market and it's and you say, oh, I forgot. There's nothing here yet.
Yeah.
Which isn't exactly true. I picked up a beautiful head of lettuce, a bunch of Swiss chard, or is it chard? I always get it wrong.
I always say chard, but I think they're both right.
But beyond that, there was not a whole lot to be had.
Well, and I think that's in part, too. We're having a really sort of long, cool spring relatively compared to years previously. So, but I'm looking at it as a benefit because we still have lettuces, you know, because as soon as it gets hot, there's no lettuce.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I hear you. There's not a lot of really exciting things. There are not many tomatoes yet.
Oh, none. I haven't seen a single tomato at the farmer's market.
There's a guy who comes to the Rittenhouse farmer's market both Tuesday and Saturday who starts hothouse tomatoes in like January.
Oh.
He does like a tunnel tomato. And so he typically has them by like the second week in May. So I've been really digging his tomatoes lately. They are ripe and red all the way through and
that's
really
nice.
Juicy. It's nice. But yeah, like there's no zucchini, there's no tomatoes.
I actually got a zucchini yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah, that's weird now that you mention it.
Because I think of like July as zucchini time.
Yeah, me too. It's kind of random.
Interesting.
I picked it up because I've been really into grating zucchini into socas lately.
Ooh.
It's really good.
That sounds good. And for those of you guys who don't know, soca, it's like a chickpea pancake-y
crepe.
Thing. Yeah.
Pancake or crepe, yeah. It's I think we've probably done a segment on it before, but maybe we will again in the future now that I've been adding all the vegetables to it. My strategy in the summer, especially in the early part of the summer, is really salad on top of salad on top of salad.
Yep. Absolutely.
I have two huge bags of lettuce and salad greens in my fridge right now, and I'll have salad for lunch and salad for dinner. I try to make the salads different though.
That is smart. Yeah, two nights this week Tuesday night, I made a big batch of salmon patties, which, you know, tons of vegetables, some canned salmon, some eggs for holding it all together, and typically breadcrumbs, or I didn't have any breadcrumbs, so I had some slightly stale crackers that I ground up and used in the place of breadcrumbs, which I forgot you could do that.
It's a good way to use them up.
So glad to, like, it was easy, and I didn't throw anything away, which I always love. But then we just ate them the first night warm and the second night cold over salads, and that was a nice way to eat those greens and make it feel interesting.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else gets me through the summer besides tons and tons and tons of salads and, of course, dips. My slow cooker is really collecting dust.
Is it?
There's the Instant Pot, though.
Yeah.
I've been making grains in the Instant Pot. I just did a big batch of barley.
Yeah.
Even though it is hot, it doesn't seem to generate as much heat in the kitchen somehow.
Well, it's really well insulated, those Instant Pots, because they have to be able to keep their pressure up. And so having a pot that, like that liner, like the walls of the pot are so well insulated that I find it doesn't put out a lot of heat.
I also see myself making a lot of tempeh steaks this summer, which we may have talked about before. You basically cut your tempeh cake into four slabs. You cut it lengthwise and then widthwise. And then you give it a marinade and just literally just fry it up in a skillet with just a tiny bit of olive oil. And it takes very well to like herb sauces or salsa or any type of a cold refrigerator type sauce.
Yeah.
Even like a little yogurt and mustard mixed together would be good. Simple, quick.
As we talk about this, one of the things I'm remembering I do a lot in the summer also, on similar lines, kind of, I guess, like things that can be served with like a yogurt dip. Like I'll roast up a bunch of vegetables earlier in the day before it gets too hot and I still feel okay turning the oven on. And then like, later in the day, I'll just kind of put those out an hour before dinner so that they're not cold from the fridge.
Right.
And then, you know, I'll make some sort of yogurt sauce and we'll eat those with maybe some grains or something and a chicken stick, you know, call it good. If I had outdoor space, I think that I'd become someone who grilled a lot of pizza in the summer.
Maybe.
But I don't have any outdoor space, so I can't say for sure that that's something I would do. But I love the concept of I've made grilled pizza and I love doing it because it's a great way to get that high intense heat without heating up your kitchen. And it's so quick and fun. So if I had outdoor space, I can almost guarantee that I would be someone who made grilled pizza in the summer.
We're down on the grill. We don't grill. We're anti-grill.
You have outdoor space. You should be grilling.
First of all, Dan feels that it is a waste of fossil fuels or whatever they use to, especially if you're going to like fire up the grill to just grill like one steak for him and I, or one pizza for him and I. So we just don't grill. I don't grill.
That's okay.
I have a grill pan.
Hey.
I did a recipe for grilled cauliflower recently and I, just broke out the grill pan.
I have certainly at times cheated with a grill pan when I'm doing recipe development and I need to give something like grill marks.
Mm-hmm.
I have one of those big double burner grill pans and I'll put that in my oven and then use it essentially as a roasting pan to get the grill marks. And it works really beautifully, but it heats up the apartment pretty significantly.
Yeah. I just let other people grill.
That's
fair. If you want to invite me over for a barbecue, I'm there. I'll bring the potato salad.
My problem is I love grilling and I just don't do it. But anyway, enough about that. Other things, other tricks for cooking happily in the seasonal transition. I mean, I think we've hit a lot of the high points, you know, cook
quick, keep it quick. Do it early in the day.
Yep. Cook in batches so that you can do it, you know, cook once, eat two or three times.
Embrace things that are already cold.
Yep.
Such as dips and the salad.
I love a salad for dinner. And I'm really glad that Scott does too, because it's one of my go-tos.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, like, I eat salad for dinner all year round, but in the summer it really is more.
Yeah. And often with salads, what I'll do is I'll make like tuna salad or salmon salad or a crushed chickpea salad or something like that. And then just a big pile of greens.
Or tofu egg salad.
Tofu egg salad.
As I recently made for our potluck.
So like, that does both things. It's, you know, prepare once, eat a couple times, and keep it cool.
Yeah.
And so those are nice ones to do.
So share your summer tips with us. We are, we have a lot of tricks up our sleeve, but not all of them. I'm sure you guys do some things that we would consider genius.
Yeah.
I'm still roasting my gnocchi, thanks to your suggestion. So bring them on.
Yeah, we're ready. So tell me about what you're loving these days.
Silicone lids. Have you seen these? Do you have them? Did I get the idea from poking around your kitchen?
Possibly. I have some. I've had some. I've actually had some for years. And I love them in certain circumstances. And essentially what they are these slabs of silicone. Some are flower shaped. Some have like geometric.
Mine are round.
Are they? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they form a seal on bowls or, you know, pans. And so you can prepare something in a bowl, slap a silicone lid on it, and put it in the fridge. And instead of using plastic wrap, which is then, you know, a single-use item, you have a lid that, you know, you can keep using.
I got them specifically because when we have leftover food, like especially leftover food that involves rice, like leftover Chinese or something, I feel that there's only one way to correctly reheat it, and you need to put the food in a dish and then cover it with plastic wrap so that it steams the rice and everything. But Dan, as you know, hates using plastic wrap. It's like always an argument whenever we need to use any plastic wrap. So silicone lids have solved this problem for me. They're perfect. You just stick them. That's why I got them. But since I have them now, I use them for all kinds of things. Like, turns out I have skillets that don't have lids, but the silicone lid fits, right?
Oh, wow.
So like, for example, I have a little butter warmer style pot, which last night I just was steaming broccoli just for me. But that pot has no lid. So I used a little silicone lid on it and it was like perfect.
Yeah. I really like them for, when I'm making bread and I want the bread to rise and I don't want to put plastic on top.
Yes.
They're brilliant for that because they keep the dough moist. You don't get any sort of skin on the top of the dough, but again, you're not using plastic. You're not using something you're going to throw away. So I use them a lot for that. I use them when I'm taking things to parties or potlucks to cover the bowl. And they're nice too because even like, you know how with plastic wrap, it doesn't stick to wood. Like, so if you're bringing a salad and it's in a wooden bowl, the silicone lid won't give you a great seal, but it's better.
Right.
Than
how many
plastic
do you
wrap.
Have?
I have maybe five or six in varying sizes.
I got a set of three, but I could see that I would like more.
Well, I also – so I have some – you know the company GIR, Getting It Mm-mm. Right? They make all sorts of silicone tools. And I used to do some work with them. And so they'd send me some stuff and I'd write about it. And I like – they have a ladle that they make that I like a lot. But they also make them in like – one sized for a loaf pan and one sized for like a eight by eight square, like brownie pan. So like I use that 8x8 square lid anytime I've made like baked oatmeal or brownies or some sort of cake. And I don't want to put plastic on top of the pan. I just, you know, pop that silicone lid on top.
I often marinate things in that 8x8 pan, and that would be a good use of the silicone lid of that size as well. I've definitely seen them before and I thought, oh, it'd be nice to have those. And then I would think, but I'm not really going to use them. Like, how often would I really need them? But since I bought them, I have not looked back. I think they're great.
I have some that I've given to my mom and my sister, and I had like these little like cup size ones, and they really like those. Like my sister uses the cup size ones. If like her kids don't finish a glass of milk, she just pops it on top of the glass and puts it in the refrigerator. And my mom uses it if she hasn't finished her cup of coffee and wants to be able to like reheat it later in the afternoon. She puts a little silicone lid on the cup and just puts it in the fridge. And it's a good way to like keep the refrigerator smell out of those things. I also have a friend, my friend Alana Chernilla, who we interviewed recently. I was just up at her house because I was teaching a workshop near her, and they use theirs to cover their compost bowl. So they just use a big bowl in their kitchen to gather compost, you know, each day before they take it out. And so to keep the flies out and keep any smell out, they use a silicone lid to cover the compost bowl.
I like it.
Which I thought was really brilliant.
Because I've been using like a big Tupperware container, but I've just been leaving it uncovered during the day, and then I hassle Dan to transfer it to the compost bucket at night.
Yeah.
But it would be better. It would be better to do it that way, actually.
Yeah. And they have like a designated one. So it's like, it's not one that they use on for food other they're going to eat, but it's great because it keeps the compost smell and the flies out and the fruit flies out.
Right. Which becomes a bigger issue as we move on through the warmer and warmer weather. I've been telling Dan, I don't think my kombucha making SCOBY and the compost bucket can live together in the kitchen because of they both draw flies. But we'll see. So far, so good.
But no, they're a great tool. And the only thing I wish about them, I don't put mine in the dishwasher because
I know you do. Why would you not?
Well, just because they don't stand up well in my
dishwasher. Why?
Like my dishwasher.
Oh, they don't. You can't position them well.
Yeah. Okay. And so they either fold over or they stick to things. And so things don't get clean in between them. So I find them sort of a pain to clean, but not so much that I won't use them.
I like everything else in my kitchen, or I should say almost everything else. I throw those right in the dishwasher.
Yeah, I'm pretty, you know me.
Why do you even have a dishwasher?
It does the dishes.
Oh my God.
I mean, I put things in it. And I do certainly put like silicone utensils, but for some reason I feel like they don't get as clean as I want them to get in the dishwasher. The lids. I don't know. I'm weird. I have many thoughts about the dishwasher and how I feel like it over time breaks things down. And so I want something to last. If I know I'm not going to be able to get like a particular utensil, I always hand wash it so that I extend its life. But I'm weird that way.
Yeah.
If you could only see the look that Joy is giving me.
I just
right
don't
now.
Understand why you would want to spend minutes of your precious life doing dishes when you didn't have to.
I don't know.
That's my take.
I just feel like there's certain things I want to make sure last, and so I wash them by hand.
You also seem to get some kind of perverse pleasure out of washing things by hand.
I love when things are really clean, and I also derive...
I think the dishwasher makes things more clean.
You know what? Here's the thing. I have a crappy dishwasher. Oh. So, like, I have the bottom of the line. Like, it's the one that my apartment building installs.
Is it from the 60s also?
No, it's from like 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And so it doesn't work that well. So I feel like that might be part of it.
Okay.
If I had a really fancy dishwasher like you do, I might be more inclined to put more things in it.
My dishwasher is actually too fancy, but that is a conversation for another day.
Indeed.
I think that's about it for this episode of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.